Welcome to episode 15 of the Sports Geek Podcast. In this episode, we chat to the guys behind FanCam, look at athletes getting hacked and the changing focus of sports digital teams.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. Now, here's your host, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. My name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek, and you're listening to the Sports Geek Podcast. This is episode 15. You can get all the show notes and links to this episode at sportsgeekhq.com/15. Thanks again for all the feedback to the Seat Podcasts, both episode 13 with my presentation with Philippe Dorr from NASCAR, and then also the mega interview podcast last week with episode 14. We actually do finish off the last of our seat interviews today, speaking to Tinnis LaRue from FanCam and Kylie Kaflish. And then we get back into the swing of things with a few segments on Grandstand, looking at a few athletes getting their social accounts hacked, how they could have prevented it, and how you can protect your own social accounts, both personally and for your team. And then we look at the changing focus of sports digital teams, just a bit of a look back over the last few years and now what teams are looking to. But first, here's my interview with Tinnis LaRue from FanCam. Here we are, final day of Seat. Everyone's starting to go. There's a tour for Sporting Park soon, so we're just trying to get a few interviews. And I'm here joined by Tinnis. And I knew I was going to get you. Tinnis from FanCam, and I'm going to get you to say your name because I don't want to muck it up.
Tinnis LaRue.
LaRue. Apologies for not getting that right. And you came in on Monday and you did the mini FanCam.
Yeah, we spent some time all week, but we had the opportunity to capture the audience.
Yep.
With our technology, which is kind of cool. Seems like they liked it, and it's a great opportunity to show people what it's about.
So, for the people who don't know about FanCam, one, tell us where they can find it and what it is.
Okay, so it is a visual product, so it is best that you access a website if you're close to a computer. It's FanCam.com.
Yep.
So that's easy enough. What it is we figured out how to take gigapixel images very fast. So a gigapixel image, let's start with that, is a high-resolution image. Normally, well, to give you an idea of the size of these things, if we print it out as a billboard, it'll be 2 football fields in length. So it allows us basically to capture everyone in the stadium face-level detail.
So, you know, at the conference, you pretty much, James Taylor got up the front, took the click, yeah. around, and it took 15, 20 seconds around about that.
Yeah, it's a relatively fast process, but basically it's a composite image. So it's like building a puzzle. So James would take, depending on what the scenario is, the technique differs from the MCG to a small conference room, but we have different recipes, if you like, of how to capture these images. And then there's a team back in Cape Town that know how to put them together. So we call it stitching.
Yep.
And to make that a seamless whole.
So in the end, and yeah, I'll share the show links of the Seat Conference mini fan cam, but I'll also share some. I think you're sharing one from the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a... must have a bit of a stadium bucket list of number of venues you've been to. Have you kept count? Well, like how many venues have you been to?
I do the boring stuff, so I spend time in the back office. James has a more impressive list there, but we've been lucky because we were first to basically understand how to monetize the content. Stadiums include Bird's Nest in China. Recently did Champions League final in London. Stanley Cup, it's the second year that we've done that. We've done 18 for 18T, we did the NCAA finals a few times, and yeah, so we've got a nice list of places.
So I want to get into that campaign side of things, because yeah. First of all, I must apologise that I did not get you guys into my presentation, because one of the key things was that Philippe and I were looking at was a campaign that is killer content that provides engagement and gets data, and your fan cams tick all of those three boxes, because you end up with this very rich, content-rich site, you know, 95,000 people, and you can see every single person. It provides engagement because people want to find themselves
tag themselves, tag their friends, and obviously, you know, the holy grail of the CRM guys is to get the data.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I haven't yet gone and tagged myself on the Seat One, but I will. And they can tag themselves on with Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn.
Anything we choose. I mean, when we're in China, we've integrated QQ and Sina. We just did activation for Red Bull in Moscow, where we integrated VKontakte, which is their social platform. So, yeah, we can capture a lot of data through that way.
And so you were talking quickly there about some of the stadiums you've done, and from the monetization point of view, who are the people that are wanting this the most, and how are teams or stadiums making some money out of it?
Yeah, so I'm going to take one step back. You spoke about content and data, and we do hit all the boxes there. The reason we do is because it's fan-centric. As you know, it's really difficult to give fans, if you're a brand, to make either a funny campaign or a cool campaign.
Oh, yeah. What, you mean you can't just have a complete, will you please have a viral video?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the best brief.
So where we're, and it's because of the nature of the product more than through the design of it, it's focused on each and every fan. I mean, I need to stop.
Oh, no, it's still recording.
Okay,
that was a technical hitch, and apologies for that. I might edit it out, or we might just keep it because that's the live podcast. Okay, so apologies doing that.
So back to the fact that it's fan-centric. So we create content that's actually customized content, because if you zoom into your face, that's the center of your universe, and everything else gives context. I experience something completely different because I'm in a different part of the crowd. So it's like the case where you open the world map when you're in Australia, then Australia is the center of the universe, and when I'm in South Africa, it's there, and same thing. So we're lucky there in that the content is fan-centric. That allows us the data. That allows us the engagement and everything that comes with it.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
And we're back with Tinnis from FanCam. We were talking before about how to monetize it and how to monetize FanCam, because everyone's looking to do a digital campaign, but like, how do we pay for it?
That's a really good question. I think, look, we have clients in rights holders, clients in sponsors, sometimes it's an agency. Mostly it's a brand, because brands are looking for digital content and targeted digital content. You spoke about the Holy Grail earlier. So brands end up paying for this, but it might be through a team. So we'll work with teams and help them to understand how to incorporate the FanCam into their offering to brands. Because one of the strengths is that it helps with integrated marketing campaigns. If you already have a video that you want to promote, you've already spent money on, then we put that on the big screen. If you've already paid for signage rights within a stadium, and on the LEDs, we change the LEDs to only have Coca-Cola's name there. So it gives the brand a better ROI, and it allows the team, when they sell onto the brand, to close the marketing loop. So although we work with teams, it would be to help them mostly to sell it on. In other cases, we work with agencies who already sit with those budgets and rights to activate.
So when you take photos of 70,000, 80,000, 95,000 people, surely, and you know, and I've heard actually Will Anderson talk about being at sports venues in the US and how they always have kiss cam and it doesn't happen as much as in Australia, because in Australia, a guy will just drop his tries and do a brown eye.
Yeah.
Right? And do something inappropriate. Now, you've taken shots of thousands and thousands of people. I'm sure you've got some where they go, hey, we're taking a shot, get ready. And you've had to do some pretty nifty shot Photoshop work in some parts of the crowd.
Yeah, the guys in the back office, I've seen some interesting stuff. There's one piece of data that I find really interesting. We captured, I think I mentioned earlier, all 24 US dates of the U2 360 tour. Which was appropriately named. And I think there's a million fans we captured there. We had one guy that flicked us the bird, as you'll say down under. And then we did a sevens game in Australia, I think South Coast.
Oh, well, that's a party atmosphere, so, and that's pretty crazy, so the sevens.
Our ratio for that was 1 in a million in the US, and out of the 15,000 fans, I think we had to remove the middle finger of 98 individuals. So you have a lot of really excited Australian guys on the photo throwing their fists up at the because obviously the paying customers didn't wanted the bird in there. So it is different in different cultures, but that's why we have the Photoshop guys.
So the last thing, I believe this is your first time at Seed Conference.
Yeah.
One, how have you found it, and what have been your key takeaways from the conference?
I found it really interesting because I sat and just tried to learn, understand what are the problems that the CRM guys face, what digital activation guys, and data and Wi-Fi has been the two words running around. I'm not sure if how many people know how to implement either, and that's going to be interesting. So I'm a bit worried that there might be too many buzzwords. There have been a few really good panelists that really cut to the core, saying, right, there are lots, so let's take the digital activation stuff. Cool is cool, but tying that into revenue, there's a gap there. So I think there's a space for in the industry for a lot of common sense. I think people are starting to find their feet. They're not just jumping from one platform to the other.
Yeah, the latest bright and shiny thing.
Yeah, and I think... You hear words like roadmap a lot. I think that we're starting to see some principles being distilled and saying, and they're surprisingly old principles. What is value? Why are fans at sporting events? Why are they at, in our case, live music events? The reasons are the same, be it a mosque event in Moscow or a Sasquatch Festival, music festival up in Washington. And I think articulating those reasons, why people engage, why do they gather together around a band or a team, if you understand that, then digital activation comes naturally, and making decisions about CRM and what the value of data is becomes easier. And I'm starting to see, just as a bit of an outsider, or I don't have skin in the game with CRM and stuff like that. I'm starting to see more clarity in the market. And guys not running around saying, ooh, these features, those features, this activation, Instagram now, Vine there. It's more principal discussion, which is really good news.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. Where can people find you on Twitter? What's your Twitter handle?
I am Tinus Leroux, TINUSLEROUX.
And fancam.com, and we'll put the link for the Seat 2013 mini
fancam.com is a good place, and I'll make sure that the Seat is one is up there as well, and that's a good place to get basic overview of what the technology is, but we've got 120 examples up there,
and I look forward to seeing you in New York next year for Seat 2014.
I've already booked the tickets.
Alright, thanks for joining me.
It's a great pleasure, man.
Find all Sports Geek podcasts at sportsgeekhq.com/SGP.
Thanks again to Tinus Leroux from FanCam for joining me on the last day of Seat. Technical difficulties withstanding, we got through it. And check out seatconference.fancam.com to see everyone who went to the conference. A fair few of the attendees have tagged themselves, just proving the point of what Tinus was saying, that provides the engagement and also provides the data. On my return from the US, there was a bit of a social media storm in the world of AFL, where a few AFL players were targeted by hackers and had their accounts hacked in quite a high-profile way. They sent out a few obtuse tweets and a few weird Instagrams. It caused a bit of a ruckus, but obviously it was not done by the players themselves. So on ABC Grandstand, I discussed with Francis Leach on how they could have prevented it and the importance of securing your social identity.
So Saturday morning, Francis Leach with you. We like to spend a bit of time with our good friend Sean Callanan, the digital sports guru from Sports Geek HQ, each week to talk about sport in the digital world. He's with us here this morning via the telephone, the old-fashioned technology. G'day, Sean. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Francis. And yourself?
I'm good. My account on Twitter hasn't been hacked this week, which makes me in the minority. There's been a lot of that going on lately. Tell us about who's been copping it.
Yeah, there was a few that copped it this week. First, it was Buddy Franklin's Instagram that was hacked, saying "See you later, Hawks. I'm going to the Giants."
Let's just stop it down for a sec. Imagine if that's how he announced it, with a meme. He just said "See you later" with a big hand waving. That would be world first, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, but, you know, the fact that it had the hashtag money over loyalty and the thing, you could sort of see that it was either just a bit of a cruel joke by Buddy or that his account had been hacked. And then, there was a bit of a spate of it. A few of the AFL footballers were targeted. Dale Thomas from Collingwood had his Twitter hacked. Jack Riewoldt had his Instagram hacked as well. So there was a few others. So there was a bit of scrambling in the media and comms department, a few of the AFL teams to say, come on, boys, you've got to protect your accounts a little bit better.
Now, how do you do that?
Well, so the first one, the easiest one to do some protection with is actually Twitter. It offers what they call two-factor authentication, if I can get into full geek mode. It allows you to register your mobile phone and have Twitter send you an SMS to verify that it's really you, and if anyone tries to change your password and that kind of thing, it'll actually notify your mobile. So it's a far more secure way of securing your Twitter account than just your username and your password. But so that's one way that you can definitely lock down your Twitter account. Instagram, unfortunately, doesn't have two-factor authentication, I should say. Twitter brought it in because they had the New York Times was hacked recently and put up a post and caused a bit of a furor because people thought it was actually news. So
it can be very serious, and we've seen this in the markets in the past where tweets from, I think there was a false tweet that came out of out of Wall Street in New York last year, which caused a huge run on a particular stock on Wall Street, and a lot of money was lost, and there was an investigation into insider trading to see whether somebody had manipulated the market by sending out a false tweet in order to be ahead of the game and cash in.
Yeah, and that's pretty much why Twitter has sort of bumped up their security with the two-factor. So it remains to be seen whether Instagram and Facebook do the same. You can register with your mobile phone with Facebook as well. I mean, but the primary thing is to make sure that your password is a strong password.
So being able to sort of decipher and break down people's passwords is something that people spend a lot of time doing. So it's not a guessing game. There's probably a sort of black art to doing it.
Yeah. So the main thing is you've got to make sure that if, whatever password strategy you're going to use, it's a smart and strong password. I mean, there was a meme after Buddy's was hacked was the hashtag Buddy's password, and Buddy23 won't cut it anymore. And most likely that's what happened. There was just a brute force strength attack on their Instagram accounts. And the idea is, you can just keep pummeling away until you get the right password. So from a protection point of view, they want to make sure they've got different passwords for everything. They want to really review what apps they've connected their Twitter and Instagram accounts with. Like if they've connected with a dodgy app, that might get access to their password. And if they're using the same password on Instagram and Twitter and, God forbid, their internet banking as well, that just opens up their whole identity.
So are you suggesting also that people maybe think about changing their passwords regularly?
Oh, it does make good sense because, you never know what app you might connect with or that might compromise your account. Definitely if you have something that can give you a nice, long, strong password, usually you'll be fine, and then just be very wary of clicking on suspicious links that might get access to your account. But, what might also be the case in this case from a footballer's point of view is simple things like just having a lock on your phone. This could have all just started by, one of their mates going, "Oh, this is funny, I've got his phone, let's see what we can do." So, that for all the technical hacking there might be, it might be just someone fortuitously getting your phone and sending out a tweet. So you can secure it as much as you can, but yeah, you've just got to make sure that, you know, it's going to affect your brand potentially as a footballer. I mean, these days my account got hacked is the, you know, the dog ate my homework.
As in you, I've been quoted out of context. There's no doubt about it. Good on you, Sean. Good to talk to you. And thanks for the heads up on that. And I'll be spending all afternoon changing my passwords.
Cheers, mate.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
So just following up on how to best secure your social profiles, as I said on the spot with on ABC Grandstand, the two-factor authentication works quite well with Twitter. On Facebook, it doesn't have two-factor, it actually calls it login approvals. So the same process is that you can put in your mobile number and it will send you a code to verify that you're actually logging in. As I said, makes complete sense. Another thing that didn't get to and has happened before is when you are looking to potentially move someone on or someone's leaving your organization, and as far as changing your passwords, that doesn't actually doesn't kick someone off if they're already logged in with the Twitter app on iOS. So what you actually have to do is to effectively obliterate all devices that are connected to your Twitter account if you want to really make sure that no one still has access to it. So it's a bit of a loophole. You might go and change your passwords, but former employees or staff members you might have given it access to it at a certain point in time will continue to have access to it, even if you do change the password. So there'll be links in the show notes. This sportsgeekhq.com/15. So that was the ABC Grandstand that I did just coming back from Kansas City. So I've got one more up my sleeve, and pretty much is looking back on what seat was and also discussing it with some of the teams around the focus of what they are doing now. So it was a quick chat with Francis of the changing nature of digital teams in sports.
Time to catch up with our digital sports guru from Sports Geek HQ, Sean Kellen, and he's returned from the States from the big digital sport conference seat and slowly recovering from the Achilles injury. He's probably going to keep him out of the finals campaign. G'day, Sean. How are you going?
I'm good, thanks, Francis.
How was it this time? I mean, this is a conference. How many years has the seat digital sport conference been running?
So it's been going for 7 years. And like I said, I first went on in 2011. And in the last 2 years, it's changed in from its origins of a sports tech CEO, CTO space to adding two streams for the sports CRM side of things.
Which is the customer relations management.
And understanding your fan and the 360 view of your fan. And then also the digital guys and engagement and campaigns and things like that. So, you know, it sort of gave me a bit of time to pause and sort of reflect on, like, from a digital point of view, how the teams have changed, both over the time of Seat, but just over, you know, the time of Sports Geek. When I started Sports Geek, I was banging the digital drum of telling people they needed a Sports Geek and why they needed to build these digital teams to engage the fan. And now you can sort of see that those teams have, you know, grown and built up their skills in delivering content, first from a point of view of, you know, social and just web writing content. Been a big growth in video, so there's been a lot of upskilling and increasing their resources in video because that's what the fans are wanting. And now we're sort of seeing, and always that's been tried to sort of integrate it with sponsors and things like that, but now both the sponsors and the teams are realizing, well, digital's a really big part of it. You know, from a sports sponsorship point of view, you've got that brand recognition and you're in association with the brand. So, you know, whether it's a jersey sponsorship, a shirt sponsorship, signage at the game, you know, and that's great. The signage at the game engages the fans that are at the game. You do game activations, which the teams in the States do really, really, really well.
What sort of ones have you seen there that really have been successful? I know the Oakland A's did some good ones in the past, haven't they? They're sort of past masters at, because it's so many fixtures. Like, you might have 80 home games a year or thereabouts, so you've got to find a different angle. You can't do it every game, but a different theme or a different take on things to make it a special event, a standalone event amongst the 80 other games that are going to be played.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
when we had Travis Lodolce from the A's, and he was talking about a Category A and a Category B giveaway with bobbleheads and the garden gnomes that they did. One, just to drive more fans in, give them another incentive, but also doing things with your sponsors at the game. But the thing is, you can only engage, you know, those are, one, great because you're getting that one-on-one, you know, real-life connection with fans, but you're only connecting with the fans of the stadium. So what digital offers is it allows you to connect with the people outside the stadium, which is a larger audience. So now what we're seeing is that the team's focus is sort of moving from, I want to engage our fans and I want our fans to consume and, you know, I want to build up a digital property that's worth visiting, to how can we position our content and build content that is monetizable and make money from.
Which is a difficult transition because fans come to it in an act of trust because they believe what's being written is there for them and to facilitate their love of the club. If they feel like they're being impinged upon to further cough up cash, it changes that relationship fundamentally.
Yeah, you can't be always, you know, hitting up your fans for money. So that's, you know, that's where sponsors play in the world of sport. And so, you know, so how can the content that is produced by sports teams, you know, be in line with other commercial content. I was watching Media Watch via replay. Paul Barry did a whole thing on content marketing and branded content and how sponsors are being integrated into content in the newspapers and news on the commercial networks.
So the line between editorial and advertising is constantly being shifting and blurred.
Yeah, it is being blurred. So it's, you know, so I'm not talking about that we're going to start seeing rugby teams talking about, you know, prices going down in supermarkets. And I don't think we're going to go down that path that much. But, you know, how can sports teams integrate sponsors and in their content without it being, you know, clunky and not as cohesive as they'd like? Because the thing is, they have got premium content that fans do like. They, you know, they are going to watch the video that announces the team. They are going to watch a video that, you know, gives them ins and outs of how you know someone's knee is coming along. So they are going to watch that. So how can they better integrate the sponsor and let the sponsor get some of that referred love of the team, in the same way that's why they're on the jersey. So there's a bit of a brand awareness play, but then there's also that CRM side of, oh, I'm a sponsor and I want to target a certain style of fan to buy a car or to build a new house, or they're looking to renovate. You know, how can we look at our data and present that offer back to the fan and make sure we're targeting that fan and providing value back to the fan? I mean, that's what the sports team needs to do. They need to provide value back to the fan so they feel like feeling that they're giving the fan some value and rewarding them for being part of their community, part of their tribe. So that's where this, you know, we're seeing now that the sports teams are moving from, you know, just pure content engagement guys to having a bit more of a commercial hat on and saying, well, if we're going to build a video series, if we're going to build a podcast, if we're going to build an article series, we're going to get in a feature writer, how can we, you know, and it might be as simple as, you know, slapping a sponsor and saying, this is brought to you by, that kind of thing. But, you know, how can we get more innovative? How can we work with sponsors that are really active in the social space? You know, we're active in the social space, so how can we work with their campaigns and, you know, be aligned with, you know, what our goals are from a brand point of view and see if they can align with what our sponsors are doing?
Who's doing it here? What the best, you think, in Australia?
I think it's a bit hit and miss, you know, because a lot of it comes down, and this is where the digital teams are changing. You know, a sponsorship will happen. And, you know, the naming rights and it's, you know, the sponsorship guys do a great job to land the sponsor. And at the moment, and this is the same frustration that guys in the States are having, that, oh, then can we do some digital with these guys? And it's sort of going, oh, we'll do it because they're our sponsor. Whereas what we're seeing now, and this is the discussion that the guys in the States are having, are saying, well, when the sponsorship guys are getting in the discussion of how we're going to activate, they bring the digital guys in a little bit earlier and have them talk to the right people. So you can, you know, have it fully integrated across. So, you know, it's tough. Sometimes the sponsor marries up really well with the team, and it can work really well. But it's more of a luck at the minute than than planning to a certain degree.
Everyone's just trying to keep pace with all the changes. Where can people find you in the digital space?
SportsGeekHQ.com or Sean Callanan or SportsGeek.
Good on you, Sean. Thanks for coming in. Sean Callanan, our sports digital guru here on Grandstand Breakfast each Saturday morning. We'll catch him again next week.
Like the Sports Geek podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek.
What do you think about the changes in sports teams? Have you seen the change from developing content, engaging fans, now moving more into that commercialization model? Obviously, we've all been doing the commercialization for the last couple of years, but I definitely see one that digital is becoming really in focus on the commercialization and getting to the point of that branded content, integrated campaigns to make sure that the sponsors are happy. We can't do those standalone sponsor activations that don't connect back to both the fans but also your content, because that is what is being consumed. So just definitely a shift, especially around the fact that the digital guys are starting to work a bit more closely with the sponsorship guys and bring in earlier in the process around developing campaigns around what the sponsor wants but also what you can deliver. One last interview for this episode is one from we spoke to BJ and Colin last week from Team Blackshirts. So I've got one more interview with another one of the fine members of Team Blackshirts, Kylie Keflish. Okay, here I am at Seat Conference, just checking the levels. I'm here with Kylie Keflish. How are you doing, Kylie?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good. And how have you been interning here at Seat Conference? How have you found it?
I love it, absolutely love it.
And, you know, as an intern and looking for your way to get into the sports business market, have you done a bit of networking and met some really great people?
I've met a vast amount of people, and it's amazing what great connections you can really meet here. It's not just one person, it's a variety of people.
And, you know, tell us what you've been doing. Where have you been going to college?
I'm from Louisiana. I go to Southeastern, and I'm graduating actually in December in sports management.
Well, congratulations on graduating.
Thank you.
And I was talking to you earlier, because of an exciting placement where you're heading off soon.
Yes, I just got an internship actually with the New Orleans Saints. I'm actually the first from my school to get an internship with an NFL.
Oh, terrific. Do you know what that role will be?
I'll be working a lot with the players, the youth coordinator. So I'll be doing the whole Play 60, you know, trying to influence kids with fitness.
Okay.
And also working with the players to do that.
Terrific. And I'm sure you'll be tweeting your story as you develop your
way
in the sports business. I'm sure, as you've already done with me, you'll be connecting with everyone here on LinkedIn.
I'm hoping, yes, sir.
And your Twitter handle is, for everyone who's listening?
It's just Kylie Keflish.
All right, we'll have that in the show notes. Thank you very much, Kylie, for coming on.
Thank you, Sean.
You're listening to Sports Geek Podcast. Send us a tweet to @SportsGeek.
That's it for another Sports Geek Podcast. Thanks again for joining me. My name is Sean Callanan. You can find me at Sean Callanan. You can get the show notes for this podcast and get the Twitter IDs and LinkedIn pages for the people who are on the show. Thank you for Tinnis and Kylie for being on the show. You can get the show notes at sportsgeekhq.com/15. And you can find all Sports Geek Podcasts. Now, 15 episodes is a stack of content. Really appreciate the people who are sharing it on LinkedIn and Twitter. If you could leave a note, a review on iTunes, that would really help. I'll leave the links in the show notes to the US, UK and Australian iTunes store. All the ratings actually do separate, so it's really important that you could leave a review on wherever you are. I'll leave you with some noise from the MCG, the sounds of the game from the MCG. I'm luckily now no longer using crutches. I've still got the moon boot, but I'm able to walk to the MCG. Luckily, I live that close. And so this just was really music to my ears. This is the sound of the crowd cheering off the teams at halftime and then appropriately booing the umpires. Until next week, my name is Sean Callanan. Don't be shy. Send me a tweet. Cheers.
please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.